we kick things off with Food Friday, and today we take a look at the traditional food movement and how we can work fresher and more locally produced foods into our lives.
Our next guest says the traditional food movement emphasizes nutrient-dense, real food, and values quality, environment, and community over the convenience of the processed food we find on grocery store shelves. So, how do we get started?
Joining us now is Jennifer McGruther. She is a food educator. Her new book is called The Nourished Kitchen, Farm-to-Table Recipes for the Traditional Foods Lifestyle. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you've got this beautiful cookbook called The Nourished Kitchen, and you've also got a website by the same name that you launched in 2007. What were you trying to do with your take on traditional foods?
For me, it's an exploration of my own family's journey from processed foods into traditional foods and that culture, as well as a celebration of the foods that come from, you know, American farms.
And what counts as a traditional food or a traditional recipe?
When we think of traditional foods, we think of the foods that our great-great-grandmothers would have prepared. So they're foods in which processed ingredients are absent, processed ingredients such as refined white sugar, refined white flour, refined vegetable oils, those are absent. And instead, we emphasize nutrient-dense whole foods like grass-fed meats, animal fats like butter, as well as heirloom vegetables, whole grains, fresh fruits, those kinds of foods are traditional foods.
So you mentioned a journey of your family moving from processed foods to traditional foods. How did you make that transition?
For my husband and I, in 2007, began a farmer's market. I live in a community that is relatively isolated in the Central Mountains of Colorado. And so we didn't have access to a lot of fresh, high-quality fruits and vegetables. So we started a farmer's market in our area, and that's really where our journey to the traditional foods movement began.
You're motivated in part by Dr. Weston A. Price. Can you tell us about his work and why it inspired you?
Dr. Price was a dentist who operated in the early part of the 20th century. And in his practice, he began to see a strong shift in the health of his clients as they moved from, you know, the foods of their great-grandmothers to the more processed foods that contain refined vegetable oils, lots of sugar, caffeine, and processed flours. He found that the children were not as robust on this modernized diet. He found that for many children were suffering from rampant dental decay. And so he left his practice, and he traveled the world seeking out very, very isolated populations that didn't have access to modern foods and therefore had to subsist on locally grown foods, whatever they had available to them. And he found that those societies that adhered to traditional diets that in which modern foods were absent, exhibited exemplary health. They were free from tooth decay. They were free from a lot of our modern illnesses that many people suffer from. And overall, they exhibited just resilient health. By contrast, he would look at the same ethnic populations who did have access to modern foods. And again, within those populations who consumed a great deal of refined sugars, refined flours, refined oils, their health plummeted. And they suffer from dental decay as well as many other issues.
Wow. And did you see that same kind of benefit with your own family?
Certainly. My family is very healthy. We get sick less frequently than our peers. And our illnesses, you know, for example, the common cold, usually lasts only, you know, 1 to 2 days. So certainly our health has improved overall on a traditional food diet.
Well, I want to start getting into the food because most of the Nourished Kitchen is recipes. A lot of people associate healthy food with boring, flavorless food, self-sacrifice, or giving up lots of things that we might like. What philosophy goes into the recipes that you put into the Nourished Kitchen?
Well, first of all, I want us all to embrace our food with joy and reverence. We should take pleasure in what we eat. So in that respect, I kind of deviate from the classic health food movement, which is about restriction and self-denial, and instead focus on the wide variety of beautifully healthy, nutrient-dense foods that are available to us. So it's a book of balance. It's a book that emphasizes fermented foods and cooked foods and raw foods, grass-fed meats, healthy fats, and just generally unprocessed foods. So What I find is that if we return to the popular traditions of, 200, 300 years ago in terms of culinary perspective, we really find a lot of beautifully healthy foods that are actually remarkably flavorful as well.
One food that's kind of gone out of fashion is lard, and it's one that you're bringing back. Why lard?
Lard is perhaps one of the most reviled fats of our time, and I don't think it deserves its nasty reputation. Lard is very rich in monounsaturated fat. It's about 45% monounsaturated fat. That is the same heart-healthy fat that we find in olive oil and avocado, two foods that are lauded for their health benefits. Lard, when it is produced from pasture-raised pigs, not only is rich in that monounsaturated fat, but it is also a remarkably good source of vitamin D. Now, we must remember that a few years ago, there was a study done on children's populations and found that up to 70% of U.S. children were suffering from deficient or insufficient levels of vitamin D. And this comes not only from not being outside very frequently, but also from not consuming adequate amounts of vitamin D in our diet. And lard is a beautiful fat that is rich in monounsaturated fatty acids. It's rich in vitamin D, and also it has a great flavor and composition that it lends to culinary applications, both in pastries as well as for sauteing fruits, vegetables, and things like that.
Well, moving to kind of the opposite end of the spectrum, radishes coming up in season soon. I usually think of radishes as something I eat raw, just dipped in salt or on a salad. You have recipes, and I think you make the case for cooking radishes. What do we do to make warm radishes good?
One of my favorite recipes that's in the book is blistered radishes, in which they're sauteed in beautiful butter, grass-fed butter, and sprinkled with parsley and salt and pepper. And when they're cooked, we know radishes have that very sharp flavor. When they're cooked, that sharpness is subdued slightly, and radishes become wonderfully sweet. So that's a great recipe for this time of year.
We're talking right now with food educator and author Jennifer McGruther about the traditional foods lifestyle and farm-to-table eating. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferretz. Today on Food Friday, we are talking with Jennifer McGruther, author of The Nourished Kitchen. She's urging us to return to a traditional foods lifestyle, making foods where possible from seasonal goods, harvested as locally as we can, prepared at home. You can join with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Jennifer, we had a caller who couldn't stay on the line who said, hey, with all the seasonal stuff, what do you do during the winter?
That's a good question. During the wintertime, we have a lot of root vegetables and storage crops that can sustain us throughout the wintertime. For my family, we eat more meat during the wintertime. We eat a lot of butternut squash. We eat fresh potatoes. We eat beets and turnips, cabbage. And also, we eat a lot of fermented foods. There's an entire chapter in the Nourished Kitchen about fermented foods. Remember, fermentation, that is the making of sauerkraut and similar items, was a way that many people traditionally preserved the harvest so that it would last all winter long until greens arrived in spring again.
And now that it is spring again, what are some things that you're cooking, a recipe or two from your book that you're excited about?
Well, spring brings such wonderful, wonderful foods. One of my favorite dishes this time of year is the fresh herb frittata. And that is a frittata that is made with super fresh eggs, as well as all of the herbs that come into season this time of year, chervil, parsley, those kinds of ingredients. We often forget that eggs and milk and cream, they all have a season too, just like fresh vegetables.
Is that when the grasses are up and the animals who are grazing can get the freshest sort of food in their diet?
Exactly, exactly. So eggs and milk and all of these have seasons as well. And what we find is that some of the cream in springtime is just a wonderful, rich flavor, has a remarkable color. It's nice and yellow, and that's because the animals are grazing on fresh pasture. And also eggs tend to be at their peak between spring and summer due to the sunlight, which is increasing and then will later decrease.
When you're talking about eggs and meat and milk and cream, you're looking for stuff raised in a particular way, grass-fed where possible. A lot of times this is more expensive, not available in all areas of the country, or not easy to find anyway. Is this something everybody can do?
I think that it becomes accessible for everyone. if we began to practice intention and mindfulness. Now, I always recommend a good, better, best approach to traditional foods and to eating a whole food diet. Do the best you can with what you have and always strive to do better.
Now, I want to ask you about another food that I am dying to come into season. I'm on strawberry vigil right now. I need there to be fresh strawberries. And you have an amazing sounding recipe in your book. It's called Strawberries in Minted Honey Syrup. Can you walk us through that one?
Absolutely. So it's a wonderful dish for springtime. And basically, you make a thin syrup out of water and honey, and you marinate fresh strawberries in this thin syrup along with some fresh mint. So what that does is that sweetens the strawberries very slightly. As we know, the first strawberries can be a little less sweet than the ones later on in the season. It infuses them with a wonderful bright flavor. And then, of course, you have the remaining syrup, which is flavored of strawberries, and you can use that to sweeten an iced tea or as a syrup over yogurt as well.
That sounds great. Well, and a lot of people are also thinking about gardening season now. What are a couple or two or three favorite things to grow in the garden to have ready through the summer and into the fall?
I think that radishes are, we spoke about radishes mm-hmm. a little bit earlier, but they're a wonderful thing to grow because they take such a little time to go from seed to being ready. So it's about 20 to 30 days. Lettuces are also wonderful this time of year, and they'll begin to bolt once the season gets hotter, once it gets hotter towards summer. And of course, everybody loves vine-ripened tomatoes.
Yeah, definitely waiting for those too. And there's a traditional cake in here I want to ask you about. It's called Portugal cake. What is that? And what are the traditions behind that one?
Portugal cake is a fascinating recipe. It was an enormously popular cake during the 18th and 17th centuries, and it started to fall from popularity by the middle half of the 19th century. Portugal cake is a cake that is made with blanched almond flour. Now, blanched almond flour was a very, very popular way to make confections up until about 150 years ago to 200 years ago. And then that blanched almond flour is combined with unrefined cane sugar, butter, and eggs, and then it's sweetened, it's seasoned with sherry and rose water. So it's got a very unique flavor that is absolutely lovely, and it's dotted with dried currants. So it's got an old world simplicity to it. It's very, very rich, and it's a beautiful cake.
And does it have a decent amount of protein because of the almond flour?
It's a fat and protein rich cake. So unlike the cakes that we're accustomed to now that are made with white flour that tend to be very, very light and very rich in carbohydrate, most of the cakes that were prepared, certainly in the United States and in colonial America, were prepared with an emphasis on almond flour. Almonds are rich in fat and they're rich in protein, and that helps to balance the sugar within the cake.
And almond flour, I haven't been in the market for it. Is that pretty readily available in stores?
You should be able to find it in any well-stocked grocery store.
Excellent. And as far as looking forward to the later phases of the growing season, right now we're in sort of these beginning tendrils of spring, but what are you looking forward to down the road, late summer, early fall?
Late summer is lovely. We get a lot of fennel in my area in late summer, and one of the ways I like to prepare it is through fermentation. Fennel is wonderful when it's combined with cabbage, another late season crop, or with kohlrabi, that kind of Martian-looking vegetable that you can sometimes find at farmers markets. And you can ferment that with green apples and produce a really remarkable relish. Fennel has that wonderful licorice-like flavor. As summer waxes into autumn, you'll find a lot of potatoes coming up, turnips, which are much reviled, but unfortunately so. You also find winter radishes, cabbages, and beets, too.
Jennifer, a wonderful vision of things to come to end with there. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
That was Jennifer McRuthers. She's the author of The Nourished Kitchen, Farm-to-Table Recipes for the Traditional Foods Lifestyle.